flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, quick point people are making about our conversation in the previous segment. We'll get to Dana Brown here in a minute, I promise. That it's several people pointing it out. I'll read one that represents a view of a lot of the text page about Game of Thrones. If you missed it, we read Marlon Humphrey, the Ravens cornerback, his tweet that he and his wife started in on Game of Thrones this past week, and they think it's absolute trash. I was a little taken aback, you know, because I liked it, but not everybody's got their own taste. Seth's a fan of Game of Thrones as well, as many of you are. Good point by the text page. I think a lot of people think GOT is trash because it's flat-out filthy. You can't just skip through the filth because it's such a prominent part of the show. Feels like half the show is filmed in a brothel. Not everyone's cup of tea. I thought the plot was really good, but I personally got to a point I just couldn't watch it anymore. I get it.
Yeah, that's a kind of in lines with what we were talking about. In that very first episode, you see a couple of alarmingly taboo things.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah.
I thought they were... Okay.
Yeah, and then it only heats up from there. That's a very good point, especially
totally fair. Someone
Without
else...
Any, I mean, there's incest, there's child murder, there's a lot of really nasty stuff.
There is. Yeah, there is a lot of stuff. You gotta, you know, it's fiction, but yeah, it's... someone pointed
up next,
out,
Sean expressed surprise that people have divided opinions about abortion.
Yeah.
It's things are. Hey, Seth, did you know that people are not unanimous about this thing?
Someone is pointing out that Chris Farley was not well when, what was the movie again? Almost Heroes.
Almost Heroes.
Almost Heroes. So first of all, there's one person that's very angry with your review of Almost Heroes.
For calling it a bad movie?
Cult classic, they said.
I feel like it's objectively bad, and yet because it's bad, I am enjoying watching it because it's so bad.
Okay, yeah. And I think that's the main thing. Like, it's just, if you're enjoying something, that's the main part of the, that's what matters. Someone says Chris Farley was not well when that movie was being made, to which I would ask this texter, you mean as opposed to those junctures in Chris Farley's life where we all marveled at how healthy he was?
Oh yeah, this wasn't when he was a young competing in the Olympics in gymnastics.
That's right, when
he was 22.
When he won that 5K on Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Right. No, but things are spiraling down. I think that was probably at the height of his addiction.
Yeah, there's bad and worse for Chris Farley for sure. Are the Astros the high offer for Alex Bregman? It might appear so right now. He's still sitting out there on the market. It would appear they might be the high offer, at least among places he would be considering playing right now.
If they weren't the high offer, I guess the question would be, then why is he not on another team yet.
Right.
That, okay, you decide to test free agency, which was evidently at the time, and it looked like the Astros were treating it this way, that was it. Okay, you either accept it or you're gone, and we're going to move on. We're going to make a bunch of moves. And, I mean, one specifically, you get Paredes. But that was it, and that was the sum total of it. And if Bregman, as we approach spring training in just a few weeks, if he hasn't received an offer higher than what the Astros gave him, I guess the only other explanation would be it was for a team that he just did not want to go to.
I would say, I know Paredes is the easy one because he plays third base. I would add the Christian Walker move to this.
The money all balances out.
The ability to move Paredes over to first base if you needed to. So I think they made a lot of moves, two particular moves, the Tucker trade and the Walker signing, that you just, like, a team that's operating at or near the competitive balance tax and cares about it would not be thinking about bringing Bregman back in. And Dana Brown was thinking that way. Dana Brown said he thought Bregman would be signed by now.
When we made some trades and some moves this offseason, we never realized that, you know, Bregman would still be, you know, on the market at this time. So, but, I mean, I think we've had some conversation. And I could kind of leave it there, but, you know, we've had some conversation. And as I mentioned, the interesting thing is that he's still available. So it's not as if we're not talking about him. So we've had some conversation.
I'm going to tell you what this feels like, Seth, to me. Because Dana Brown goes on to say, let's play the one more, Ben, about how he says the door is cracked open right now.
I would say it's cracked, right? So it's the fact that he's still available. It just makes it interesting, like, man, this guy is such a good player. He's done so many wonderful things here. We'll stick with the cracked door and see what our conversations lead to.
We'll hear from real quick, Seth. We'll hear from Altuve in a minute because Altuve is much hotter on this, it feels like, than Dana Brown. I was going to tell you what this feels like. This feels like, to me, a general manager who's doing things. Like when you and I asked Nick Caserio about certain deals or looking at things, and the answer is, we look at everything. We entertain. The phone is always, our phone is never busy. Raphael Stone says it too. We always pick up the phone. And to Brown, and by the way, those things rarely happen where you're just picking up the phone, listening, going, okay, well, we'll think about it or no or whatever. This feels like Dana Brown to me is like, yeah, this is something we didn't expect to be out here. We're not going to close the door on it, but hey, there's a lot's happened since then.
Well, you know, and I think too, right, as far as keeping all things on the table, that might include, does somebody want to trade for Paredes?
Yeah.
And if we bring Bregman back, okay, is there a good option out there? And we're listening to those potential offers
right now.
Right. There's a million different directions this could go. I do think, I guess I haven't really looked at it enough from Dana Brown's perspective because I've had too hard time looking past my own pettiness. So when Dana Brown says that they're surprised that Bregman's still out there, is it possible that, hey, the Astros made that offer? They felt like they were stretching, but they probably at the time thought, yeah, look, this is as far as we can go. We know he's probably not going to accept it, but let's put it out there. And then all of a sudden, it turns out that it was actually a pretty respectable offer given the market. That, yeah, they could be reevaluating exactly, you know, if this is indeed what we thought was going to be a deal, knowing everything we know about Alex Bregman, yeah, we should still have that same offer out there because we were comfortable with him at that price. And it'd be kind of messy if we brought him back, but that is something we wanted. We just didn't think we had enough money. It'd be like going to an auction and just figuring like, okay, there's this tractor I really, really want, but I know how much it's worth, but I only got $25,000. I'm going to bid $25,000. You don't win. But then it turns out that the guy that won, didn't have the cash.
Yeah.
And they come to you and they're like, would you like this tractor? I'm like, oh, yeah. I thought $25,000 was a good price then.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good price now. Yep. Sure. So, maybe I've been a little too rigid in my thinking about all of this.
Yeah.
I definitely think from the Astros' perspective, they knew they were stretching, but they felt like they could live with that, and they wanted Alex Bregman back at that price. They just assumed that it wasn't going to be enough.
Right.
But they had to put it out there.
Yeah. It would be interesting. Like, I wonder what factors in more. Here's one more from Dana Brown saying they'd have to figure some things out if Bregman were to come back.
There would be some challenges we would have to talk through, you know, with Joe. But you know, ultimately, if you get Bregman back, he would play third base, you know. So, and then you would kind of work through, okay, what should we do to adjust and to make that happen?
Yeah.
You know, it's a long shot, but, you know, it's conversations that you have.
Again, like from Dana Brown's perspective, this thing totally it almost feels like from Dana Brown's perspective, he's just entertaining it. Maybe to keep Altuve happy and make it look like they're making an effort to do this here. Because Altuve wants Bregman back really badly. That's no secret at all. We'll hear from Altuve here in just a second. I honestly think Paredes being in the building at third base factors in heavily. I think Christian Walker spending $20 million a year on him, even though it's a different position, factors in just as, if not heavier. Like, it's you to your example would be like that tractor becoming available. But in the interim, you went and spent $20,000 on some other piece of farm equipment.
Yeah.
Like, well, I kind of needed that $20,000.
I only got five grand left. I don't have enough fields to work to justify having both these tractors.
Yeah.
So then it turns into, can I get rid of that $20,000 tractor? Now in this case, it would be Paredes.
Yeah.
Paredes would be the $20,000 tractor.
Yeah.
Then maybe we can work it out, but it's got, man, I don't know. There's a lot going on here. It's not as simple as just that deal's still on the table.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff that, you know, there's so many moving parts here that it's really hard to figure out what's the most likely way for it all to work out. Now, the way he framed that, even in saying it's a long shot, and I know we're hyper-analyzing this, but for him to say it's a long shot, usually a long shot is still something that you would like to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's all right. I bought a lottery ticket. It's a long shot, but yeah, I'd love for it to happen.
Hey, look, in a vacuum, I think Dana Brown would love to have Alex Bregman on this team. I would question Dana Brown as a general manager if he just didn't want Alex Bregman on this team.
Yeah.
You know, he makes him better, and you got to figure some things out. To me, the money is probably just as big as figuring out the defensive alignment and everything, if not bigger. Now, the one thing we can stop are the people who are sending in texts about moving Bregman to shortstop, because we heard Dana Brown say that if he were to come back here, he's going to play third base. Also, there's a texter who points out, 2482, Alex Bregman has little Oompa Loompa legs. He can't get to half the balls.
He does the most with his little Oompa Loompa legs.
Sure does.
He really does. It's fun to watch him struggle to make it from second to third and from third to home with those when he's a base runner with those little Oompa Loompa legs. But it is fun. He looks like a cartoon character. This is like the RPMs just don't look right.
Okay, this is the stipulation. If the Astros are the high bidder at 6 years, 156, I'll agree to bring him back, even though the Astros are the high bidder, but this has to be your walkout music.
Oh, that would be awesome.
All year. Not on Mondays, not on Firework Fridays. Every at-bat, you have to walk out to the Oompa Loompa song, Alex Bregman.
I feel like that the Oompa Loompa haircut is what was most unsettling to me. And I think, likewise, Bregman sometimes has unsettling haircuts.
He does have unsettling haircuts.
He does. Right. Either when it's super short or super long, his haircuts are unsettling.
He has to either grow his hair out or wear a green Oompa Loompa wig as well. But that's only on kids' days, like when kids run the bases on Sundays.
I think that's what kept that movie from being a smash success was the Oompa Loompa hair.
The hair?
The hairstyle, yeah. They could actually made some money with that movie if they were better hairstyles.
It was almost like a Mary Tyler Moore haircut, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it came down
and
looped up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I'm joking. The movie did quite well.
Did all right. Yeah, good enough to have a remake that wasn't nearly
as good. Do you know the guy that wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Roald Dahl. Well,
yeah, I had never known his entire life story.
I didn't either.
That he was a fighter pilot in World War II for the RAF, you know, the British Air Force. And they basically, after he got shot down and had a head injury, they recruited him into the spy network. So he was a spy. He would go around to various parties and whatnot in London and kind of just listen and take notes and report back to headquarters. And then they had him go visit Roosevelt. And Eleanor Roosevelt loved him because he had written this. When he first got out of the Air Force because of his injury, somebody asked him to write some notes down about his experience. So Roald Dahl sat down and wrote an entire story, and it was printed in the paper, and it was a huge success. So then, so he's a spy during World War II.
Dude.
And like a James Bond type of spy, he's sleeping with women to get information out of them and everything. And then he goes and he sits down and basically he's spying or reporting on Roosevelt. But then after the war is over, he says like, oh, people tell me I'm pretty good at this writing stuff. Why don't I just whip out James and the Giant Peach?
Yeah, he wrote that too.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Oh, all these incredibly iconic children's stories.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he getting royalties from the movie still, do you think?
His estate is. Yeah, his estate is, I think it's one of the most lucrative estates.
It's got it.
I don't know what with the copyright laws and how much he's still collecting
on it. You can buy like Wonka chocolates too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they still make those.
So it's just an incredible life. I never knew all of that. I knew he was a children's story writer. I didn't know all this other stuff.
That's wild. At the very least, I'm going to go read his Wikipedia page today.
Now, listen, that was my synopsis of a Drunk History episode that I had watched. So there might be some inaccuracies.
Could be other details.
Like, did he actually sleep with those women? I don't know. But the drunk guy telling the story described it that way.
All right. Hey, real quick, before we jump out, Altuve. Want to make sure we get Altuve here. He says, let's judge based on this answer. Are we worried about Altuve at all? He says, Bregman's free agency has been a roller coaster.
Yeah, I thought he's going to be bad for sure. Then I thought he's not coming back for sure. Now I'm like, okay, in the middle.
Okay, well, he seems all right.
I like that.
He's chuckling at the end. He's chuckling. Altuve knows which way the wind's blowing. You know what I mean? Like, hey, man, this is business, you know?
He's seen this before, and he understands it. He can go emotionally dead inside when he needs to.
His chuckle at the end is almost as good as Gronk's chuckle in that clip we played on Friday. He's talking about, hey, the way to sack Mahomes is to gently place him on the ground.
That reminds me of I did an episode with on my YouTube with Drew Hodgson, my former teammate from the Texans. We went over each of the 8 sacks of the divisional playoff game. Mm-hmm. And I actually felt better afterwards because you see how many of the issues are fixable, and that with a new offensive coordinator and new offensive line coach, it could change for the better very quickly.
Yeah.
So I did feel it felt therapeutic in a way. But at the end of it, and I will not be publishing this entire conversation because I tell Drew about something that happened where I could have made a different decision when my dad was dying of cancer that I regret, and I wish I had handled it differently. But I said, I was like, you put that behind a wall and you don't think about it. And there was like an awkward pause. And then Drew says, yeah, until 20 years from now when you get cancer because of it. And I'm like, I've been diagnosed with stage 4 irony. Oh,
he said that on your YouTube.
Yeah.
I love that.
I got a clip of it, and I'm trying to figure out whether to. Oh my God, I had conversations with like 9 family members before I actually put this out.
That's funny.
It was awesome. It was a perfect use of humor to cut through the tension.
That's good. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, Texans have an OC opening. The Texans fans have spoken. A friend of the show put out a poll. There is one huge preference that Texan fans have, and I'm curious if the organization agrees with this, and how does this affect the candidate pool? We will do that coming up next.
What is Dax? Are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen. Yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know.
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV Plus.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former 3-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A couple things on the Texans' search for a new OC. Bobby Slowick fired on Friday. Texans among several teams in the market for a new offensive coordinator. We'll get into names, but the Houston Stressons, at Texans commenter, put a poll out on Friday afternoon after the Texans made the move to get rid of Bobby Slowick. And I thought this was interesting, Seth, because I'm curious how the Texans' thought process aligns with this. And we're going to learn very little about the Texans' thought process, I think, until after they hire. Like, the one thing we know about that building, they're pretty good at keeping things buttoned up over there. I don't know.
They're very deliberate in what is leaked and when there's they're very careful.
They're
about
very careful. So
usually the leaks come from players who can't shut their yaps.
Yeah.
More so it doesn't come from D'Amico or Nick, unless it's a very planned or whoever it is in the front office or the organization. It feels like the big stuff gets leaked when it's supposed to be leaked.
Yeah.
Like, are we going to draft a quarterback,
yeah,
for instance?
Yeah, everybody's guessing at that. And who knows, maybe they'll be guessing at this. Texans commenter put up this poll. I'm very curious your thoughts on this. Have you seen it? Because if not,
no, I have not at all.
Okay,
I don't
good.
Even know what the poll is.
Okay, he asked, do you want us to hire a new OC that keeps the Shanahan scheme in place?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So I, as one of the biggest advocates of a Coop Shanastani scheme, because I was guilty of something that I always caution against, like, oh, let me plan out the perfect path where, hey, if the offensive coordinator gets hired away, it's easy to find somebody else who has familiarity with that scheme.
Yep.
I was a fool. I was an idiot. I was guilty of fantastic dreaming. So I would say I don't. How is the question phrased again?
I'll read it verbatim. Do you want us to hire a new OC that keeps the Shanahan scheme?
Oh, that's a tough one because I'm not opposed to it. It's just that I'm not married to it. It does not factor in as much. First and foremost, look, if there's one thing we know about the NFL, multiple different types of schemes work. It comes down to who's the one calling the plays. So I would say no. I think most people hear that and say, like, no, I'm not married to it. I'll say no because I'm not married to
it.
The
only options are yes and no. I probably should have said that.
Right.
There's no in-between.
Yeah.
You say no. What percentage of Texan fans do you think said no? 1,550 votes.
78%.
Wow, give him a ding, Ben. 75.4%. That's a pretty good guess.
I think I'm getting a pretty good feel for the pulse of Texans Nation.
You do.
I think it's one of the things that's definitely making us the best in the world.
It helps. It helps for sure, and it helps you. You do that YouTube show, and you've got that. You've got the interaction,
the
right
real
there.
Time, on the live stream and everything. Yeah,
I think that helps too. So yeah, 75.4%. I will tell you, I'm in the no category as well. Chip Kelly, not a Coop Shanastani guy.
Yeah, and I guess, and again, I think of those people that say no, there's some that are like, are reading that and thinking, hell no, I don't want it no matter what because it's antiquated or what have you. I'm not in that group. I'm in the group that I'll say no in that I'm not married to anything other than them being a good offensive coordinator.
Yeah, a lot of people who I saw railing against it, I think the way they were talking about it, like, you know, the predictability, the runs, you know, the style of the running game. Those are the people I would remind that you saw the worst version of that this year with the Texans. Like it works in a lot of other places. Yeah. But anytime your team is victim to something that's not working at all, and there's an insistence to keep trying to work it the same way over and over and over again, that's a turnoff.
And I think the problem is too that I think people are sometimes too rigid in what they think of it because you come from the Kubiak Shanahan tree doesn't mean that you're going to do everything exactly like Kyle Shanahan or whomever else. Is Mike McDaniel's offense the standard Kubiak Shanahan scheme? No, but because they've got a different quarterback who's got a different skill set, they get rid of the ball extremely fast. They're very RPO heavy. Sean McVay very quickly transitioned from a Shanahan type scheme to a three wide receiver scheme. So I'm not. That's where if we read too much into it, it's a little bit dangerous. Yeah. It's just a matter of, all right, more than anything, it's, is it an offensive coordinator who can adapt his scheme to the players he has on the field?
Yes, that's the big thing. I just want the offense to be good and make sense. I'm like CJ Stroud grasping the offense or being a quick study to a new offense is among the least of my worries.
Yeah.
He was offensive rookie of the year and picked up the Coop Shanahan offense very, very quickly, which is, by all accounts, it's an offense that takes, you know, there's a learning curve on that offense. And CJ seemed to wrap his, at least around the version that Bobby was doing his rookie year, really well. I think CJ would embrace it as a challenge. I think the football nerd in him would probably love learning a new offense. If he has confidence that OC, combined with the offensive line coach, because that's a big deal as well in all this, are going to put something together that is, A, going to work, and B, not going to get him killed like the last offense did.
Right. No, and I think that, exactly. Jaden Daniels just, you know, he picked up the Cliff Kingsbury scheme just fine, executed it really well. You might say, well, it's the first year. They still have room for Jaden Daniels to have a sophomore slump like that. Mm-hmm. Sure, of course. But if your objection is it's hard to pick the scheme up, there's just multitudes of examples out there of quarterbacks who have thrived the first year a new offensive coordinator comes in. It's a consideration, but it's certainly not an obstacle, I think.
No.
It's one of those things that you've got to be aware of and manage when you're implementing the offense, but that's what good offensive coordinators are able to do.
We have a texter that's asking us about CJ Stroud specifically orchestrating a Chip Kelly offense. What do you think that would look like? How good would it be?
I think, the quick decision, there's going to be, you know, quicker, the ball's going to come out faster more often, and I think CJ's perfectly capable of doing that. It's a matter of getting the muscle memory, but also just, like, this year, I know it was frustrating because you wondered, where's the quick game? Part of the problem was that CJ didn't have the options in the quick game. That's one thing that with, you know, the classic Shanahan system or Kubiak system, there aren't necessarily hot routes. It's the play is what the play is, and there should be something that's coming open based on that coverage. I think what's changed over the years is that defenses have gotten so good at disguising coverages that it's really hard for any quarterback of any intelligence level to really get a good feel for exactly where to go with the ball quickly if it's not engineered into it. And that's what I think CJ would relish, having that ability to attack quickly when he's blitzed. Mm-hmm. All those things that Jaden Daniels was able to do this year. I think yes, he'll adapt to it, and especially because he's seen the other side of it. I think any willingness of his, or like, I don't worry about him holding on to the ball too long as a matter of the way he operates. I think when he had trouble with that this year, it was because there were, like, on that play, they were trying to get to the ball deep if they saw the right coverage, and you got to wait for it, and then boom, the protection doesn't hold up. It doesn't have to be that complicated or that difficult if you've got the right guy calling the plays.
Will Chip Kelly leave Ohio State after just 1 year? Seth, as you pointed out, now, he wasn't there for 1 year. He was there for a few years, but is it Jim Knowles? Jim Knowles.
Yeah, Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator.
Just left.
Yeah. And one of the reasons he probably left was he was making $2 million a year at Ohio State. Penn State offered him $3 million a year.
Yeah.
So Chip Kelly, there's going to be some team out there, and I will not be surprised if it's the Texans, that's maybe willing to offer him a big old boatload of money. And then the other part of it, too, is, yes, Chip Kelly was only at Ohio State for 1 year. He did kind of checked off an item on the bucket list in that he won a national championship, not as a head coach, but as a coordinator. And he might be ready for another challenge. He, like many college coaches right now, might be thinking, you know what? Life's a lot simpler in the NFL than in college football these days. I can actually work with the same players for multiple years. I don't have to worry about the transfer portal or NIL or anything else like that. I can just go coach football. I think that might be very appealing to Chip Kelly.
That's an interesting question. Like, how much, with the new structure of college football, with NIL, with revenue sharing with the players, with all those things, I do wonder for the assistants. Like, the head coach is always going to have to be one of the tip of the spear in recruiting. But now a lot of these big schools, like Ohio State, have GMs for their football program, and they've got a whole staff dedicated to NIL and recruiting. I wonder, and I don't know what the answer to it is, but I'm curious, like, if the role of the coordinators and the position coaches are the same now in terms of having to get out on the road and recruit, or if they literally allow, you know, if there's a front office type of position that handles a big chunk of that, you know?
I think that's where things are changing so much, and what you hear from college coaches is that, man, the recruits and the parents, by and large, are not even listening to the merits of the school or anything else like that. It's show me the money. And I think that you always want your head guy being the one doing the recruiting, or your coaches being the ones being recruiting. But yeah, maybe in some respects, as they evolve the support systems around all of it, it might be less of a concern. But I think the main concern for the football coach, because Chip Kelly is the offensive coordinator, what I think about it from him with a nuts and bolts perspective in college is that you don't know who's going to be here this year versus next year. Are we bringing in a bunch of brand new guys every year? Maybe he likes that challenge. Mm-hmm. Maybe he likes the idea of being able to bring guys that want to come there through the transfer portal. You don't have to worry. You don't have to wait for kids to develop. You don't have to play a freshman who might not be ready yet. You just go out and get a transfer. He might like that, but he might not like the shifting sands of college football.
Yeah, I think that's it. Because he's at a place that is best positioned to take advantage of that. You know, the shifting. They have the highest budget of any school for NIL. So in terms of retaining guys or going and getting guys. And look, if you're in the portal and you're going to other schools, like Ohio State would be a destination to go to, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Who would want to leave a college football program after, as a coordinator, you just won a national championship? Who would leave that to go to the NFL? Might it be somebody like the highest paid offensive coordinator in the NFL, Todd Monken, who won a championship with the University of Georgia and then took the job in Baltimore? It's not like this is without precedent.
Yeah.
And it's just like in Todd Monken, who's been in both the NFL and college before that, I think some of it is, man, if I'm not going to be the head guy, I love the challenge of taking a program that needs to be a turned around and turning it around and changing a quarterback and an offense for the better.
And Monken is in that sweet spot, too, to where he is just sought after enough to be of interest for some of these openings.
Yeah.
But apparently not on the level, at least yet, of the Ben Johnsons and the Aaron Glenns, you know, the guys who have grinded, you know, the Mike Vrabels, to where they're, you know, you pencil them in for these jobs because they've been doing it for a while. Maybe Chip Kelly is in that, if he gets to the NFL, even a successful Chip Kelly is in that in-between stage where, okay, he gets C.J. Stroud turned around. He turns the Texans into a top-five offense. Boy, we should at least talk to Chip Kelly, but maybe Chip Kelly does just enough in interviews to where he remains offensive coordinator for the Texans. You know, like, he's just a bit of a turn-off enough to where they're like, no, we're going to go with this. This young energetic guy over here, whatever.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And especially if there's a lot of reasons that he might not want the New Orleans job, the Saints job, if theoretically he was up for that.
Yeah.
Like, they've got salary cap issues. What are you going to do with Derek Carr? All of that. It's just, and I'm not saying this to bag on New Orleans. I think, like, New Orleans is kind of in a tough position that they knew they were going to be in as they kept extending Drew Brees' contract and all that through the years. It's just that this is more, when you've got a young quarterback like C.J. Stroud who has a weapon in Nico Collins, Joe Mixon still looks very good, that Houston is probably the best place for him. If he does want to land an actual premier NFL head coaching job, that a year or two or three in Houston might be the best spot for him.
Yeah, I think so. A slam dunk trip to Vegas could be yours. How? Tuning into Sports Radio 610 for at least an hour a day, by God, on the Odyssey app, live, rewind, show podcast, as long as you're spending an hour inside the Odyssey app listening to Sports Radio 610 or any participating station on the Odyssey app for 60 minutes, you earn your daily entry, and then you and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March, each with an extra $5K in your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. I can only imagine what I could do with $5K going out to Vegas in March. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. AFC-NFC title games in the books. Are the Texans just an OC away from playing and winning a game like we saw yesterday. We will discuss that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
First play from scrimmage for Philly. They mark him down at the 40-yard line. Toss it to the left side. Barkley's got a lane to the 50, to the 45. Spin move to the 40. Barkley's still going. Zigzags inside. 20, 15, 10. Touchdown. Saquon Barkley. He is incredible. 60 yards spinning away from would-be tacklers.
Saquon Barkley, that was the Eagles' first play from scrimmage yesterday. Gave them a 7-3 lead. They would go on to win 55-23. We'll talk about that game in just a second. The Eagles are on their way to they're on their way to New Orleans. The Chiefs are on their way to New Orleans. Sports Radio 610. We are on our way to New Orleans thanks to Flight by Yingling. We will be on Radio Row starting a week from today. We're headed out on Sunday, so we're looking forward to that. We thank the Low T Center as well for helping send us to New Orleans for Radio Row. The hot seat where all the guests that come in are going to be sitting and talking to us and the other shows is sponsored by Exclusive Furniture. And we also thank Mokarem Injury Lawyers for sponsoring the live stream. You guys will be able to watch us on the live stream, so you can watch us visually or listen to us on the Odyssey app. But we are very, very excited to be headed to New Orleans. I'm going to pick up all of our beer tomorrow, Seth. I'm meeting up with the Flight by Yingling folks. Loading up the back of the truck with plenty of beer for the Airbnb that we're going to be in.
Oh, good.
Can't get thirsty.
I was afraid that there wouldn't be enough as we're sponsored by Yingling.
Yeah.
That they might run out with Sean T. Pendergast.
Don't
in the
you
house.
Worry. Yeah, don't good. You worry. Yeah, I'm loading up the truck, driving it to New Orleans. So
that's going
to
be fun.
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. It'll be fun. It'll be a fun week. So I'm anxious to see who, you know, which celebrities are roaming around Radio Row, which ones wind up on the station here.
Is there any, like, Yingling? Is there any kind of, like, a special thing that people do with Yingling, like a certain type of boiler maker or anything that a signature drink combo or something?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
Because we could probably invent one for them.
Yeah, if they want us to. Well, they're excited that the Eagles are going because Yingling is brewed and originate. Well, it's brewed everywhere now. It's brewed in Florida and Texas, but they originate up in Pennsylvania. So it's a good business week for them with their couple of weeks with the Eagles going. But they are full bore in Texas now, so they're excited to send us there.
They're probably not going to – they might not jump on this, but this is just a loose idea, a little brainstorming.
Sure.
So like a Jaeger bomb is you drop a Jaeger into an energy drink or something.
Yeah.
So what if there could be a Yingling bomb, which would be like drop a 5-hour energy into a Jaeger or into a Yingling or something?
I'll find out when I go
–
I'm meeting up with them tomorrow, so I will find out if there's already something that's out there in the universe.
Or what if it's a Pope Zaza energy shot
that
they drop into a Yingling?
Now you're talking.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, put it in the Google Doc.
Put it in the big book of drink ideas.
The Zaza bomb.
The Zaza bomb. I like it. I like it.
It's a yet to be created and branded Pope Zaza energy shot that you drop into a Yingling.
We're gonna invent
this
it
is good.
In New Orleans. We're gonna invent it.
This is good and healthy.
Oh yeah. What could
I
go
got
wrong?
There's a lot of vitamin B in my energy shot.
Okay.
That's what makes it special. It's a proprietary blend.
Big selling point to the kids at 1:30 in the morning. Eat some vitamin B.
It's got vitamin B and it's got nutraceuticals and flavonoids. And that's yes. And enough caffeine to kill a horse.
Sold.
So, what makes it so special? It's not enough. It's not the caffeine that would kill a horse.
Right.
It's the vitamin B. You see,
the other stuff.
That's what gives you the energy.
Flavonoids. So we heard Saquon Barkley score a touchdown. He would do that two more times in the Eagles' win over the Commanders yesterday, 55-23. I was watching that game yesterday. I watch everything through a Texans lens when it dawns on me to do so, Seth, when I'm not watching the actual Texans. And two things. One, I wasn't nearly as angry watching that game yesterday as I've been watching other teams play throughout the year, comparing their offense to the Texans' offense. Like, oh my God, this is a far less talented team. And yet they go and get 7 yards on first down fairly easily, these worse teams or less talented teams than the Texans. So I wasn't as mad because I know there's hope in the future here for the Texans that the offense is going to look much, much better next season under whoever, you know, whoever's running the thing. And the other thing I'm just asking myself, and I'll ask you, like, how close, if the Texans are able to fix the offense,
yeah,
how, I mean, they beat the Bills this year and they yeah. competed with the Chiefs in a couple of games. Like, how close are they to the two games that we watched yesterday?
I think they're very close. I think they are very, very close. Like, sometimes, like, when a team looks good on paper, it's not just because of the Madden projections or anything else like that. It's because they've got guys that can play good football. We've seen that CJ has a high ceiling at this point. It's just we saw him flirt dangerously close to the floor this year was the problem because of largely the circumstances around him. And I think an offensive coordinator that had a promising first year. But I'll go back to what we said all last offseason. I thought Slowik was very promising as an offensive coordinator. He hadn't proven that he was a good offensive coordinator yet. That's where, I guess it was the most unpopular thing I was saying all last offseason was he still has to prove a few things. And just like a young quarterback, he's got to do it when teams have an entire season of film on him and they know his tendencies, what he likes to do. And he hadn't established that he can establish a run game. So he was promising, but he wasn't genuinely good. And I think that at least as of yet, right now in his young NFL career, I think it was too early for him. Maybe he'll be good down the road. I think he is very, very, very smart, but he just wasn't ready for it yet. So, and this is partly why I just have a hunger or an appetite for a proven older offensive coordinator for multiple reasons, but especially the season that we just saw. I'm just thinking too about, you know, DeMeco is a first time head coach in making the hires. As you've always said, hiring, like in normal business, being able to hire good people, that's pretty much the secret sauce right there. Yeah. If you hire good people, all of the other leadership books and everything, it's a lot easier to execute all those strategies when you got an organization full of good, qualified people.
Yep.
I always think back to, you know, when Bobby and DeMeco were young quality control assistants, and DeMeco was known to be just an exceptional human being by that point. Mm-hmm. People that had worked with him and knew him and had either played with him or against him, they knew what kind of a person DeMeco was. And he had a name already. But he and Bobby bonded and they had a kind of a similar mindset and they became friends. And I'm just thinking about the one-sidedness of them. Those two sitting underneath a fort that they'd made out of pillows, you know, at a sleepover.
Someday.
And saying, hey, whichever one of us gets hired as a head coach first, let's be sure we bring the other one with him. And I'll bring it. Bobby saying, hey, DeMeco, if I get hired first, I'll bring you with me. And DeMeco's like, oh, cool. And Bobby's like, will you do the same for me? And DeMeco's like, sure.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of a lopsided jackass arrangement is that? Like, clearly Bobby wasn't going to be the guy that gets a... If you had to handicap it in 2016, which one of these young quality control assistants will be hired first as an NFL head coach?
Guy who was the captain of every team he's ever been on and been a Pro Bowl linebacker, or the guy who just got plucked out of Pro Football Focus?
The guy who took a hiatus at Pro Football, took a hiatus from coaching at Pro Football Focus.
God.
Yeah, I'm going to bet on DeMeco Ryans.
Where?
And he wasn't up to snuff.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really hard week for DeMeco. I think when, you know, you try as a coach, you're trying not to actively think about your postseason moves during the season because then you've got your eye off the prize.
Sure.
You know, those guys, they do try to live by their credos and really focus on the next week. But it's impossible, I'm guessing, for DeMeco throughout the season to really just start to get frustrated at some of the things and the way things were operating on offense. I'm watching yesterday, Sean, even in the Bills game, where I'm watching Josh Allen up at the line of scrimmage with 15 seconds left on the play clock, and as Steve Spagnuolo is throwing every pre-snap look in the book at him, he's got time to make adjustments. And as opposed to the Texans versus the Chiefs.
Snap the ball.
Snap the ball with 2 minutes and two
snap
seconds
it.
Before.
Snap
we got to get that extra timeout.
Snap it. Let's go.
Yeah.
Oh man. So we got a lot to keep an eye on, man. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, Figgy Fig in here as well. What's up, fellas?
Not much. How are you today?
How are we doing?
Doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got the Bobby Slowik news dropped right in the middle of your show on Friday.
And look what's happened since.
That's the sweet nectar.
I think Lopez induced pregnancy there.
Yeah, I did.
He was just like, let's go. What are you waiting on? And they were like, fine, here you go.
I did. I said, today's a good day. To
on Friday?
Yes.
Oh, you willed it into existence.
Well, sure did. No, you're right, though, because that was the other part of it is, man, daylight's burning.
Yeah.
If they're not going to make a change, if they are going to make a change, you want them to do it as soon as possible so they can start really having these conversations with whomever your offensive coordinator of choice would be. You got to get in the mix. I mean, Chip Kelly's going to have all kinds of feelers out for him right now and all these other guys that whether – like and then the head coaches get hired and they're hiring their offensive mm-hmm. coordinators. You got to get on this.
Yep, for sure. Did you guys have a good weekend?
Pretty I had a free Saturday and didn't. I mean, the Saturday was wild. Like first time in a long time, especially you.
Yeah.
You know, and Sunday as well, of course. But
yeah,
we were talking about that over the weekend. Just like wild. Like, what do? You kind of twiddling your thumbs. I did a lot of piddling around the house.
Yeah.
I did some honeydews and all that stuff.
Cooked some meat.
I cooked a big venison hind quarter.
Yeah.
For 14 hours. Oh, Seth, it was so good. It turned out so freaking good.
Yeah, I gotta get a smoker.
Yeah,
I just I've got my crock pot. That's my slow cooking. That's what real men do.
I'm gonna smoke a brisket.
They use their crock pot.
I'm gonna smoke a brisket for the boys in
Seth
New Orleans.
Deep down is a 55-year-old woman. He's got a crock pot out there on the counter.
Well, I can set it on her. We've got like this little nook in our kitchen where I can watch the bird feeders too at the same time.
There we go.
It's not helping.
That's my guy. That's my guy right there.
So wait, you're gonna cook for us in New Orleans?
Yeah, I'm gonna smoke a brisket for everybody.
Oh, nice. Oh yeah.
Okay. Just to have
as if there aren't enough food options in New Orleans.
Yeah, but just kind of have.
We
ain't got no good brisket, though.
No, that's right. They're not known for their brisket, Figgy. You're right. Well, and we're going to be kind of well outside the city, too, where all the, like, mm-hmm. the hardcore French Quarter options.
Exactly.
I'm guessing they have some food outside the French Quarter.
I know a couple places by the house, actually.
Yeah. I'm loading up the truck with all the beer. Tomorrow,
baby.
I'm getting all the beer tomorrow. I'm mm-hmm. picking it up from
what beer would you have?
Flight by Yingling, sponsoring our trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm glad you asked, Reggie. It's a good question. Flight by Yingling for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yingling is, and then we're going to invent a new drink concoction while we're there too, on behalf of Yingling. I think we might have already come up with a winner of the first right out of the blocks. Because a Jaeger bomb is a Jaeger dropped into an energy drink, mm-hmm. like a Red Bull. So I'm thinking, like, we could have a Yingling bomb, which would be an energy shot dropped into a Yingling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Does that already exist? I'm sure the text line has let us know.
I'll double check.
And I don't know if Yingling might be like hearing this right now and be like, will you shut the hell up? We are responsible. So you might never hear about this again.
Yeah.
It might not be endorsed by them, but damn it, I'm going to do it.
Trust me. I know them. They like that they're being talked about right now, I'm sure. I guarantee. Hey, are you guys happy for anybody in this Super Bowl?
Anybody.
Just name a person.
Okay, so that's going to be one of my confessions at 12:20, but okay. There's enough time difference. I can give it to you right here.
Yeah.
I hate the Chiefs.
Okay. I don't think you're alone there.
But if the Chiefs win, when was the last great Texan, truly great Texan, that had a chance to win a Super Bowl like DeAndre Hopkins?
Because Jacoby wasn't, a great. Yeah.
Owen Daniels.
Obviously
that actually upset me even more.
The Owen Jacoby, Daniels.
Because Jacoby Jones became, like, Ravens legend. I was like, no, you don't get to have him.
Yeah.
So I kind of would be, I don't want it to happen, but if it happens, I'd be happy for
D-Hop.
Yeah.
I would be too.
Is Owen Daniels the only one?
I think I could recall
others.
Anyway.
Like the guy that was like a multi-year Pro Bowler that went on with it. There's lots of other guys that have won. We had like six guys who were backups that won Super Bowl with the Patriots.
Right.
Yeah. No, but like not, Owen not Daniels, Arian, no, not Andre.
Yeah, like Owen Daniels like caught a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl.
A big one.
Yeah. No, like guys who contributed. Hopkins,
so not David Carr.
Not David Carr.
With that giant
Super Bowl champ.
Oh my God! So DeAndre Hopkins.
That made me sad. The whole that question I understand was supposed to be a positive.
Right. Are we happy for it? Now I'm happy to be going to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely,
it's going to be fun.
Yeah,
and I'm looking forward to the game. Yeah. It's gonna be, you know, even though it's not a fresh matchup, we just
rematch
saw it 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The rematch, yeah. it was one of the better Super Bowls that we've ever seen. So this will be good.
And I mean, like, outside of the pure hatred emanating from, you know, the greater Houston area for the Kansas City Chiefs, that's a great team. The Eagles are consistently a, like, incredible roster. Mm-hmm. If you're just looking at the game itself, it does profile well.
On paper, it does profile. And the Rocky analogy really holds up. Because Rocky, the Philadelphia fighter, going against Apollo Creed, the champ.
Dancing.
And I think you could argue, like Rocky won, got the better of the fight, but lost on a controversial decision. A holding penalty towards the
Rocky
end.
Rocky 2.
Now we've got Rocky 2, where Philadelphia theoretically would have to win to hold up the parallel. And then they would have to go on to face Clubber Lang next year in the Super Bowl.
Let's not go there.
And then they would have to face Russia in the Super Bowl after that.
What is the Russian NFL team?
Yeah.
What is the team that profiles as Russia?
Titans.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
All right.
Gracious.
Seth is pondering this one right now.
Seth, by the way, feel free, when that comes to you, because I feel like I know how this goes. You get off air, and then like 20 minutes later, you're like,
Feel free. I know which team is Russia.
Let's call back in.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, fellas. The floor is yours. Great to see you. This is the first Monday we've gotten to see you guys.
I know.
Here.
What are you doing here?
It's very
I'm asking myself the same thing.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.
Russia would basically be the Cowboys because they try to incorporate... They try to absorb all the territories around them, and yet their core philosophy is slowly eating them from within. That feels very much like that. That's the Soviet Union,
and
especially.
They promote their own family members to be the next premier.
Ah, there you go.
Like Brian Schottenheimer.
Yeah. And, you know, the strong man holds on to power and refuses to give it up.
And they hire Brian Schottenheimer to help keep salaries down for other
NFL. Right.
Remember that? They're like, we're not paying market.
But the train's got to run on time,
We'll just promote this very average offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That'll keep the salaries down. Good luck with that. All right, we're done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you. I'll see you tomorrow, my friend.
And a Zaza bomb to you.
Zaza bombs for all. All right, we're done. We are out of time.